This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we're answering your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the place where you can send your questions, and we'll endeavor to answer them as we're about to do today. A reminder, Layla Mudin and I work together at the Hoffman Center. She is Hoffman Center nutritionist, and patients who come to see me invariably see her, but she also has a practice on her own within the Hoffman Center for patients who are desirous of staying with their doctor and want a direct route to a nutritionist. And this is a convenience for many patients across the country who might find it difficult to travel to the Hoffman Center and see me, which is a prerequisite for undergoing my direct medical supervision. So check drhoffman.com for information on how you can become a patient either of the Hoffman Center, that's both yours truly and Layla, or work individually with Layla Mudin, which is a more convenient and more economical way of accessing our expertise. All right. Layla, okay. What's our next question?
Yes. We've got an email from Eleanor. Eleanor says, I use the medications Losartan, HCTZ, and amlodipine besalate. What vitamins can I take for my blood pressure along with these?
Okay. Well, we just did a podcast on this subject recently. With the disclosure that chiolic aged garlic extract in a recent study lowered blood pressure pretty significantly, like 3 or 5 points or more on both the systolic and diastolic end. So in addition, it seems to have anti-atherosclerosis effects. So, you know, the goal of maintaining blood pressure, it's not just to get that number right on a blood pressure monitor. It's also to reduce the risk of stroke and heart attack. So with chiolic, you actually lower that number, but you may protect the arterial walls. And the dose I would recommend for people with high blood pressure is 2 of the cardiovascular formula. I think they're 500 milligrams of the chiolic aged garlic extract twice daily. So at 4 a day would be the right dose for that. I also read an article on olive leaf extract recently, and olive leaf extract has the effect of, it's vasodilatory. It dilates blood vessels, and it relaxes the endothelium, and that can be helpful. And so let's do a little lightning round on some other things. I'll throw it to you.
Oh, magnesium.
What else? There you go.
Magnesium. Yeah. Magnesium taurate, especially because the taurate form, you know, also helps with any kind of, you know, excess fluid or anything, and it's particularly good for the blood vessels. We also like CoQ10.
Sure.
I mean, anybody with high blood pressure, CoQ10 is a mainstay.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. Fish oil,
certainly. Mm-hmm. And
pycnogenol.
Pycnogenol or grape seed, because both have been shown to have these beneficial proanthocyanidins, which protect the endothelium, have a good effect. Okay.
I would like to also tell Eleanor that if she monitors her blood pressure, which anybody with hypertension taking medication should do, she should monitor her blood pressure. And going forward, if she's on a good diet and she's taking these good supplements that we're talking about, it's fairly common that her dosage on her blood pressure meds may need to be reduced at some point, which is always very good news when you're able to take a little less medication.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Also, there as a non-supplement way of lowering blood pressure, I'm very impressed with the results that people are getting with the Zona Plus device. They are a sponsor, full disclosure, but I'm really impressed with the research, and I've, you know, test-driven the device myself. It's easy to use. You consecrate about 12 minutes a day to an activity where you squeeze the device. It's kind of a handheld device. And by applying pressure to the device in a very programmed way, they actually walk you through a program of how much pressure you're supposed to put on it. Remarkably, it's that seems to work. And you think, well, that sounds like hocus pocus, but they're really doing some great scientific studies on that. And it seems to have really profound effects on blood pressure. So that, and this is well validated in clinical research.
It's very exciting because it is so simple, and I've demonstrated it for some of our patients. You're basically holding the device in your hand. It's like a hand gripper, and you hold it for 2 minutes. You rest for 1 minute, and then you switch hands, and you hold that for 2 minutes and rest for a minute, and you repeat that cycle 2 more times, and you're pretty much done.
Right.
Yeah, and you do that on a daily basis, and that's all it takes, and that's pretty good if that's going to help lower blood pressure.
Right. I suspect that the way that works is, I don't know how many of you out there do what are called planks in yoga or in the gym, but a plank involves holding your body steady with a certain amount of force in your arms and your legs and in your core for a period of time. It could be 30, 45 or seconds or a minute if you're really good at it. And that is a type of isometric exercise that's probably really good for the circulatory system. Many people can't do that, but especially older individuals. But this handheld device, I think, replicates the type of steady pressure that you exert that gives nice feedback to your central nervous system and your blood vessels to keep them open and provide circulation. So it's scientifically validated, and it's worth a try. Now, the way to get information about it is go to tryzonanow.com. And they have a money-back guarantee. They'll send you a device, and if you don't like it, send it back, no charge.
Yeah.
So they have a program where, because they realize it's a little bit of investment. You want to see if it's useful for you, if it's something that you can get used to applying. And it's a very ethical
sponsor. And it's not
sponsor.
Medicine.
Yeah, it's a non-pharmacological way to go, so... I think how many people in the United States with high blood pressure are taking awful medicines that cause fatigue and impotence and, wooziness and
resistance to weight loss. I have a real problem with those who are having that problem because of those medications.
Yeah.
Now, that's not an invitation to stop your blood pressure medication. Please do not stop your blood pressure medication without your physician's supervision.
Right. And that's the other thing is, we don't want to give the false impression. Okay. Oh, Dr. Robbins says take these pills. I just stopped my blood pressure medication. No, don't do that because that could be dangerous.
Nope.
But do monitor your blood pressure while you're undertaking that. And if it goes down, with your doctor's advice and consent, you can taper your medication. It's best to taper rather than go cold turkey on meds. But ultimately, you might be able to get off. And, of course, look, let's face it, diet is ultra important when it comes to blood pressure. Exercise, very important. You're carrying extra weight. That's good news because you lose just 5% of your body weight, and there's about a 50-50 chance you can get off your blood pressure medication. So what's 5%? I mean, if you're like 200 pounds, you lose like 10 pounds. That's pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Eleanor, thank you for your question. Okay. Oh, we've got we've got a comment here from Alan, who listens to the podcast a lot, Dr. Hoffman, and he says, I listen to all the podcasts, and please ask Dr. Hoffman for his comments on a recent Scandinavian study which says that if you diet for a whole year and tolerate being hungry, you then keep the weight off even after you return to a normal diet, because by this time, your hunger hormones have adapted. I wonder, do World War II prison camp studies endorse this view?
Okay, I think it's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek comment, but let's talk about that Scandinavian study, which I saw recently. I forget which journal that study was in, but it's an interesting study.
Uh-huh.
And what that study is about, it's about the concept of reset. And, we have a thermostat that wants to keep us at our previous weight. And it's a very mm-hmm. stubborn thermostat. That's why people have trouble losing weight. But you can reset.
Set point.
Yep. You can reset. Yeah, it's called a set point for weight. Exactly. And you can reset that appetite and weight thermostat with a steady adherence to a low-carb diet or a paleo diet, as I'm doing. And I tell you, I just did the Whole 30 just to experience it. I wasn't particularly trying to lose weight. Effortlessly, without trying, that was not my goal. 6 to 8 pounds just melted off me within, I don't know, 6 weeks. And
wow.
And I haven't lost more weight. It's just now I'm in a steady state where my appetite is under much better control. My cravings are under better control. And that's really the whole rationale for the Whole 30 diet. It's a paleo diet. It's a grain-free diet. It's not necessarily low carbs. I'm not on a ketogenic diet where I'm not having any mm-hmm. fruit or having no potatoes or starch. But I'm just eliminating broad swaths of modern foods. And it achieved a reset for me. Really, that's the goal for many people undertaking that. And the comment, you can go online, go to the Whole 30 website, and you can see a lot of people are experiencing that. Very, very excited about it. So it's one of those viral phenomena, which is really capturing the excitement of a lot of people. And mm-hmm. the goal is not to stay on it forever, because it's kind of a pain, you know, no alcohol ever, no grains ever. You know, that's kind of restrictive. But you do it for a month, and you might achieve a reset where you find that you're less, hungry for those foods. And
right. The false hunger goes away. Insulin levels, leptin levels, ghrelin levels, all of these very important satiety and hunger hormones normalize.
Yep.
So a lot of that craving just goes out the window.
Right.
I mean, if people would just give it the chance, it literally goes out the window. Hard to believe when you're in the throes of craving. And, you know, you think that you can't live without that cookie after dinner or that bread.
Right. So let's explore what he said in tongue-in-cheek, which was about the starvation victims, we actually have studies on concentration camp survivors, and they actually did research on the inhabitants of Netherlands. Now, Netherlands in World War II, they ate pretty good during the first part of the German occupation. But towards the end of the German occupation, and especially during the Allied invasion, the Netherlands went through a terrible famine. And so this gave them an opportunity to study, not concentration camp type, you know, starvation, but, you know, relative caloric restriction, and people just didn't get enough food, you know, and had previously had a good diet. And mm-hmm. what they found was, with that profound caloric restriction, the opposite may happen. There's a tendency among concentration camp survivors to become ultimately obese. And one of the reasons for that is, that it's just a matter of also culling the herd. The ones who weren't insulin resistant or obese may not have survived. And so the ones who actually survived may have had really good, fat preservation abilities, which is actually why we're programmed to be fat. Is to store, you know, like camels store water in the desert, where we store fat in our bellies and our adipose tissue against the possibility of starvation, which was ever present in Paleolithic times. But now starvation is virtually an impossibility. But a model for, you know, Paleolithic starvation occurred during World War II. And what happened is many people died of starvation. The ones who survived may have been insulin resistant, you know, the type who, when they ate normally, could go diabetic. And besides, I think there's also a psychological compensation, is that once you've been exposed to such profound starvation, food takes on a very, very emotional connotation. I think that's actually why there was such a wave of obesity among people who grew up during the Depression, you know, with plentiful food available. They have a harsh memories of starvation.
Yes.
And then
A scarcity mentality.
It's like, clean your plate, you know, don't waste food. People, you know, in Appalachia are starving, blah, blah, blah. And so they may overcompensate and be opportunistic eaters rather than, you know, it's almost as like a a hedge against a future starvation event because her body was shocked into profound weight loss. Now, that is also, I just comment, is that that's the biggest loser phenomenon, too. And there's a big scandal brewing now as they've revealed the true facts behind The Biggest Loser, is that they put them on the most draconian diets, like, you know, 500 calories a day. And then they had them working out 8 hours a day, this punishing regimen. They actually slipped them drugs sometimes, speed and, you know, appetite suppressants, so that they could have more impressive results. And almost to a man, to a woman, they all have gained back all their weight and more. And many of them are angry and very.
They should sue.
There may be something in the offing, because there probably was a pretty ironclad legal documents that they had to sign to undertake this. And maybe that's why the producers of this are protected from retaliation. But the people who did this really feel betrayed, because that was too draconian a way of trying to lose weight.
It's not sustainable. It could put you at nutritional risk if you go past a certain time.
Yep.
You know.
It's just
even
not sustainable.
Dr. Hoppen, remember the lose 40 pounds in 40 days?
Horrible.
Same type of diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to maintain a 500-calorie diet the rest of their lives? First of all, you'd waste away and eventually die.
Right.
It's not, maybe you will lose the 40 pounds in 40 days, but then what happens?
They still have your money.
And there's the rub.
They still have your money.
Yeah, they still have your money, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's like, you'll regain the weight, but we'll keep your money.
Yeah. Too bad. Oh. Alan, thank you very much for your comment.
Good question. We have time for one quick question, if you got one.
Oh, okay, we do. Actually, Gabe writes, what do you think of a new study suggesting increased longevity in mice with nicotinamide riboside? Is it a safe supplement? And what they found, Dr. Hoffman, is, I'm quoting the researchers, the substance which is close to vitamin B3, a precursor to NAD, a molecule that plays a key role in mitochondrial activity. And our results are extremely promising. Muscular regeneration is much better in mice that received the NR, and they live longer than the mice that didn't get nicotinamide riboside.
Wow. Maybe we should be giving that to our patients. What do you think? I'm just kidding, because we're all over the nicotinamide riboside phenomenon.
Yeah.
We sell a product called...
We sold out.
We sold out, yeah. I wrote an article about it. We did an interview about it. It's a very exciting compound. I mean, I could go on and on about it. But please go to our articles on it and our podcast on it. It's fascinating, because it's something that promotes NADH, or NAD, which is nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, which is an energy compound within the cell. So it means that it has, like coenzyme Q10, which is known as ubiquinol or ubiquinone, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere in the body, and it governs many energy processes in the body. And if we can amp up energy in the mitochondria, then we really got something that can ward off, age-related slowdown and combat fatigue. And I have to say, I've been taking it. I'm very excited about how it's making me feel. I feel really energetic, and I'm not entirely sure that it's just that. I mean, I take a lot of supplements, and I'm on a really good diet, but I think it holds a lot of promise. And even if it doesn't necessarily make you feel, totally revved up, it's got the potential to slow the aging process itself, which is exciting. Now, is it safe? The answer is, I really think it's very safe. There's nothing in the literature to suggest that in any way, shape, or form, it's unsafe. I think the downside is that, is the expense of taking it. And if you want to take it as an experiment for 20 years to see if it improves your health or extends your lifespan, I mean, that's a little bit of an investment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not more expensive than, most premium supplements at the dosage that you're supposed to take.
Yeah.
So.
Terrific.
Yes.
So, Gabe, it's a good supplement. All right.
It's a good supplement. I mean, is it, now, this thing with mice, I mean, I gotta say, though, that we need more human studies on it. There are human studies that are ongoing. I can think of one I mean, there are many that are ongoing. I think one very interesting one that's happening right here in New York at Cornell is a study looking at individuals who suffered from traumatic brain injury. They got hit on the head. And when you get hit on the head, you know, you get this post-concussion syndrome where you feel very tired and knocked out. It's almost like your brain, gets it suffers in terms of inflammation, in terms of energy production, and people feel tired, unfocused, they lose IQ points. And so the trial will look at the effects of that on TBI sufferers. And I think there are ongoing trials looking at Parkinson's disease. MS, I think, is a subject. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they undertake trials using nicotinamide riboside in chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia patients. We have a few of our patients who are beginning to take it. They also, in talking to Dale Bredesen recently, who's the remarkable doctor who's looked at natural approaches to Alzheimer's disease and wrote the first paper showing reversal of dementia using lifestyle, diet, exercise, and supplements. He listed among his supplements that he thinks are promising nicotinamide riboside in our conversation. Mm. So, you know, along with such things as resveratrol and coenzyme Q10 and, DHA from fish oil, yeah, and, you know, all those things. So, good stuff.
Yeah.
I have to say it's among, mm-hmm, sometimes, you know, in this field, it's like, especially nowadays, now that I'm a little bit more, I think, sophisticated in my evaluation of supplements, I'm less jumping on the bandwagon with every latest craze. For example, I never got with krill oil. I just never thought that krill oil was superior to fish oil. And nicotinamide riboside, I mean, I was prepared to dismiss it. But the research was so promising, and the rationale, scientific rationale, so good, and my own personal experience has been positive, and we're beginning to see results with patients. We had one patient who had hearing loss, and she says that it was helpful with restoration of hearing. There's actually some studies showing that sudden onset hearing loss due to noise exposure can be reversed with nicotinamide riboside, and it's a lot of good stuff on that. So.
Very promising.
And it's available.
Gabe, for your email.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff is like, you know, they'll talk about something and say, well, gee, the scientific studies in rats show this is really beneficial. And, you know, it'll be available maybe in 5 years. It's going to be a prescription drug. You know, it's like, well, how practical is that? This is something where you can actually go to the Hoffman Center, and order Niacel and give it a test drive. I would recommend that you try 2 capsules twice daily for 2 weeks. That's one bottle of 60. And, you know, see if it makes a difference for you. I encourage feedback. So you can use radioprogram@AOL.com to send us feedback, positive or negative, on your experience with nicotinamide riboside. I'm very anxious to hear, it's kind of an informal way, how people are faring with that supplement. Okay?
Okay. Yep.
So that's about all the time that we have for today's podcast. And we encourage you to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Thanks for joining us today, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Have yourself a great week, and next week we'll be right back with more of your questions on our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine.